it really was like my guiding light throughout this whole process. And like, it's still just the book that I always go back to, because I'm like, adults need to read this, kids need to read this, everyone needs to read this book.
I'm sure you want to know what book our incredible guest Sarah Camio was just talking about, and I'm guessing you might be surprised when you find out. In this conversation, you'll hear some inspiring stories from Sarah about being a school counselor and the founder of Diverse Stories, a nonprofit that believes that children of color deserve to see themselves represented in ordinary stories in which a character's race is not their defining characteristic, and bringing those stories to little free libraries, classrooms, and organizations across the U.S. Without further ado, here's the show. Welcome to another episode of The Book That Blank, where we talk to interesting people about books that are meaningful to them. Today, we are here with Sarah Camio, talking about Tallulah, the Tooth Fairy CEO. So, Sarah, could you please introduce yourself and tell us why you picked this book?
Hi, thank you guys for having me. I'm Sarah Camio. I am a school counselor in New York City at a elementary school. And I started the Little Free Diverse Library Project. But I chose this book because when I started my Little Free Diverse Library Project, I was like, you know, picking out different books that have characters that look like me. So they're Black and brown, and they just, you know, a lot of times books talk more about being Black and brown and our hair and like kind of the maybe issues surrounding it or the reasons why like our life is hard. And they're all great books to read. And I think that they're such important books to read. Like, people need to learn why it's hard to have Black hair sometimes. And they need to learn why like people judge you for certain things. But I was like, I need a book that makes me feel amazing. I need a book that lifts me up. I need a book that inspires me. And I just stumbled upon Tallulah, the Tooth Fairy CEO. And I was like, this is the book. Because Tallulah is the CEO boss. She, you know, does what she wants, how she wants it. And she runs her company and she has a board and like, she's just so cool. And when I was starting this project, I was like, I want to be Tallulah. I want to get things done the way she does it. And I like the way she carries herself and doesn't, and the book isn't, you know, surrounded by, you know, all the reasons why her life is hard or why it's, you know, difficult being Black. It's about why it's empowering. And it kind of just celebrates that like Black joy and like just being a boss, because we also don't see a lot of people in high positions, especially like CEO positions, that are Black and brown. I for sure can't name many. To have a book that, you know, takes on this whimsical fairy tale that like we all grew up knowing, like, I don't know anyone who didn't believe in the Tooth Fairy, like, unless like they were told very young, but like, we all love it. I still love it. When kids at my school lose their teeth, I'm like, is the Tooth Fairy coming? And so this book though, I'm like, no, is the Tooth Fairy coming? I'm like, is Tallulah coming? Because I just love what she stands for and I love what she does. And this book just is so great. And I think it's good for adults to read. I think it's good for kids to read. And so when people ask me what my favorite book is, I just always go back to this. And it's just been like, what's really been my beacon of light during this project and my like without fail go-to book. So I had to choose it and I had to make you guys read it. And I hope you enjoyed it as much as I do.
You really did.
This is a modern classic.
Right?
Well, this was actually our first children's book for this show. And I thought that was really special because at first you're like, oh, I picked the children's book if that's okay. And I was like, hell yeah, it's okay. Like, I love this because, you know, what I very quickly realized when I read the book is it's perfect literally for any age. I mean, like, it's short, it's sweet, it's got a badass main character. And I really love the way that you were just phrasing it right here about representation and also seeing her as like a problem solver, right? Because, you know, there's the whole thing, like the kid, you know, he doesn't have his tooth anymore. And she's like, hey, like, don't worry about it. Like, here's a gift to make sure you can get the next one, you know? Yeah, I just thought it was like, it's the kind of story that you could read over and over and constantly be like thinking about, having your head just like trying to be like Tallulah, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's just like, I'm like, how do I be more like her? And it, that, like, there's not a lot of books where you walk away thinking that. I mean, not a lot of kids' books, in my opinion. And yes, she's an adult, so it's kind of a different setup. It's not like a kid that I'm trying to be, but she's still like a kid at heart too, for being a tooth fairy, you know? And it's just like, she loves what she does. She loves working with kids, which is me. And so I just really, you know, try to be like her. And I think she's so cool.
Do you feel like you are a kid at heart as well?
Oh, definitely. When I'm at school with my kids, I like am thriving because I just get to do what they do. Like, we'll play Uno for hours or like run around, and like, I suck at basketball, but like, I'll try to play with them. And I'm like, this is so fun. And like, there are other people who just kind of like, you know, watch the kids do what they do. I'm like, no, I am in this game. I am playing this game with them. We are in it to win it. Except I let them win Uno a lot of the time. But then there are times where I make them lose and we like work through why losing is hard. But it's hard. I'm good at Uno. So.
Wow. You turn Uno into a teaching moment. I feel like Uno is always so high stakes. It's like there's nothing to learn.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, reading this book, Sirens, reading this book, though, I was like, man, why haven't I read more kids books? Because I'm like, really, like, it's most about like coming back to the lessons that are just so fundamental to like building like confidence and like self-worth. Yeah, because I feel like you lose that and you just like, you know, are all about comparing yourself to others, and you forget that, you know, all in our own beautiful ways, like we have things that we love as much as this. And if we were like willing to, you know, just go out on our own, be the boss of our own lives, like that's very possible. Plus I just like pictures, right? Like this is drawn really well and very beautiful. But I'm like curious, like have you always been reading kids books, or just when you started this job back, or
I definitely took like a hiatus from kids books when I like stopped being like a kid, but once I got into working at my school, I was like, it's going to be important to have books for the kids to read, especially like as a school counselor, books about confidence, books about, you know, handling our anger or coping skills. But like a lot of times those books are, you know, books with animals, books with like monsters. And I love those books. Like two of my favorite books that I read with my kids, one's like a monster and one's a monkey. But I'm like, there are other books that similar messages, but we just need to go deeper. And like, we just need to look for those, that same meaning. And when it came to my library project, I think I was just really into kids books because that's when we learn, you know, about people. That's when we learn why people have different color skin, or why someone wears a hijab to school, or why, you know, someone goes by he, even though he looks like a she. And there's so many questions at this time in our life. And so I was like, this is where education starts. And what I thought was the most like powerful part of it is like when I was growing up, my parents always read me stories, and I feel lucky that I had them reading me stories. But I close my eyes and imagine all the parents who pick up like Hair Love and are reading Hair Love to their kid. And like, they might not know half the reasons why this. So like, not only is the kid learning, but the parent is learning too. And like, I'm picturing, as I explain this, like a white family reading Hair Love for the first time. And so like they're learning as they read it. But then I'm also picturing like a Black family reading Tallulah the Tooth Fairy CEO at night. And they're like, yes, queen, like this is what is up. So it's just like, I always think about, it is more than just the kid reading it. It's the adult reading it too. It's the teacher reading it to the class. And so it's just like multi-educational, and it's hitting so many different people in so many different spots. So also kids books are just faster to read. So when I fill the libraries, I would say 90% of the time, like if you look on my Instagram and I share an adult book, I've 90% of the time read it, or like pretty much read it, because I'm not just going to share a book that I'm like, hey, the cover looks cool. And so it's easier to share kids books because I can read that in one sitting. But I don't know. I just think there's so much power in kids' books. And like you guys said, after you read it, you were like, oh, this book is dope. And also like, why don't we read more kids' books? Like, I feel confident now after reading that versus like if I just read like a chapter book. So I don't know. I think there's a lot to be said about them. And I think that they can last a lifetime. Like my basement still has all the kids' books I read. And like my parents, like whenever you have kids, like they're ready. And I'm like, okay, we have more books now that are better, but they just last forever. And that's also why I like this project, because I think a book is so tangible. Like you hold it, you pass it on, it lasts forever as long as it doesn't get like water damage. So yeah, I'm team kids' books.
Yeah, no, you've made us team kids books too, and really appreciate it. And I think there's something so gentle about kids books where like, you know, there are lots of books that you'll read and you'll think like, oh, this is an adult topic. This is a serious topic.
Right.
And you'll come out of the book exhausted. You know what I'm saying? Like you might be feeling bad about yourself. You're hopeless, right? Like, I don't think you never really get that impression from a kids book.
Right.
And I think that makes them really special because, of course, you know, we all have that part of ourselves, right? The kid inside who, you know, needs that gentle inspiration or that gentle teaching moment, right? And
yep.
I think especially now, just with, you know, with how people can be sometimes, it's like sometimes it's scary to get confronted by a person because like you don't know something. But when you can go to a children's book and like learn it in a very like nice way, it's low stakes. You know, it can like expand your worldview a little more without having to like worry about, you know, getting embarrassed or something. So I think that there's, you know, it's possible that there's more benefits for it for like the older you get, right?
Yeah. There definitely are. I completely agree.
I'm thinking now though, like when I was in fifth grade about to go to middle school, I saw like third graders on the playground with like iPhones. I'm thinking now K through five kids are on their iPhones. They got everything. And then you present them with a book like this. And I don't know if it would even hit in the same way. So like in dealing with kids now, like, do you think like, oh, they just like pick this book up or bored with it, go back to TikTok? Or is there like a certain kind of book that you find is like more engaging for them?
I think that what it comes down to is like fostering a love for reading at an early age, because I'm fully addicted to my phone, right? Like I love my phone. I'm on it. My screen reports, like, you've used up all your time today. I'm like, awesome. But I have a love for reading that was started in me when I was young. So like, I have goals every year. I'm like, I'm going to read 24 books. Like I go to the beach and I'm like, I don't have service, which is good. But like, I'm also like, this is my beach time to read my book. And so, but I have a love for reading. And so I think that that is like the most important thing you could do, because all my students literally in second grade have TikTok. I'm like, what the hell? But they also, some of them, and this is what I hope we're trying to do as like a school community, and I think a lot of people are trying to do this, is like foster a love for reading. And so if you have that, yes, you'll have your phone and yes, you'll have your, you know, TikTok and Instagram and all this, but like you still come back to reading at the end of the day. And so like for me, there's so many nights where I'm just like on my phone. And then I'm like, I love to read. I have books all around me. I'm going to read tonight. And then I like almost have to force myself, but it's like, that's what I have to do because I still love it. And so I just think that, it worries me that like people don't want to read, or like people love their eBooks. And I'm like, but don't you want to like flip a page? But like, it's okay as long as they're reading. But I definitely think there are more books that are engaging than others. And I've seen kids who don't like to read, but then finally find like a graphic novel that's like cartoony and like cool and fun, and they get more into it. And so it's like, we have to learn and adjust how we create books and the books that we give to our kids. And I also think like, if you're giving a black boy a book about a white boy living in, I don't know, somewhere else, Nebraska, he might not connect with it. Like I sure wouldn't. And I didn't growing up. And so it's like, what books are we giving to our kids that they feel seen and celebrated and heard? And so I think it's so important that we're like being intentional about the books we're giving. And I actually not recently, but in the school year, I was reading Ambitious Girl, which is by Mina Harris. I was reading it to one of my students, this Black girl who's like such a queen. She's perfect. She's going into second grade. And she was like, I can't read this book. I can't say that word, ambitious. And I was like, it's okay. We're just going to read it. And so every page, it's basically like, you're an ambitious girl. You're an ambitious girl. And at the end, it's like, you are. And then the next page says like ambitious girl in big letters. And she goes, an ambitious girl. And she goes, oh. And I go, you said it. And she's like, I said it. She's like, I'm an ambitious girl. And she was like, so proud of herself. And I was like, this is like what it is. Like, this is like, we're afraid to read, or we're afraid of like the words, and we're afraid, but like we see ourselves and we want to be that. And like, you know, she said it and she felt it. And she was like walking around the whole rest of the day, like, I'm an ambitious girl. And I was just like, this is what it's all about. And so I don't know. I just think that they will have, phones will be forever, but like, so are books. And so like, how do we get people to love books? A little less than their phone, but just enough.
Sarah, you don't realize you just made Jen and I's day with that story.
Oh. That's,
yeah, seriously.
I'm like, how do you, must have changed like a lot as a person if you're just accumulating experiences.
Yeah. Like that.
Yeah, like, yeah. Since you started as a counselor to now, like, in what ways do you changed or grown?
I think I'm like a completely different person. I mean, I get there and I feel like I literally give everything. And then I'm like, I feel so filled up when I'm there. It's almost like I don't need anything else. And like, I could be there surrounded by them at all times. And the best is when like, I could be in my office. I could like do some computer work, but I'm like, now I got to see the kids. And so they fill me up. And I think that I didn't have someone that looked like me when I was growing up in school. And so I didn't have someone there for the good times, the bad times, the friend trouble times. And like, to be that for these kids is so important. And, you know, when they have a tough day and I'm not mad and I'm like, yeah, today is a hard day. And we're just, yeah, we're going to rip that down. We're going to throw that, but like, I'm still here. And I think that all kids need someone who's still going to be there. And I think to be like a Black person, a Black woman who is still there at the end of the day, is huge. And like, there are days where I'm like, it's going to take me a minute to forgive you for this, but I'm like, it's unconditional. And a kid the other day was like, he doesn't even see me. He doesn't get counseling, but he was like, I walked into his class and he was like, someone was like, who are you? And he was like, oh, that's Miss Kamya. She calms you down if you are mad. It was like, I don't even see you. But like, the fact that you know that about me and know that like, I do that for others. And he's like, he doesn't need to see me. But like, it just felt so good that like, some like a fourth grader could notice that about what I try to do and that I do that for others. And so I don't know. I'm obsessed with all my students. I talk about them 24/7. I like look at photos of them on my phone. I'm like, I don't know how I'll ever have a kid because this is like already an obsession, but I love them. And I just feel like it's what I'm supposed to do and where I'm supposed to be. So it feels really good every day, even the hard days.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Like, I think you're like the greatest educator I've ever known. Seriously.
Oh, that's so sweet.
No, I'm just saying, like really, especially as someone who, like, you know, because we moved around a lot growing up, and you know, we were in all the range of schools, you know, and there's one woman who I'm thinking about who definitely had that like consistent, caring presence. But I only was in school with her for a couple of years, you know. Her name is Joan Hopkins, out of California. And then from that point on, it was just felt like, you know, every year it's a new teacher, a new relationship, no real, nobody who could be like a steady, you know, rock for me in that sense. And for you to have a similar experience, but be creating that and like enabling that for children, I mean, it's literally like life-changing for everybody that knows you and that you share it with. So thank you, really.
Oh, of course. Of course. I love it. I love the students and I feel like a better person because of it. I need them just as much as they need me. Yeah. They lift me up and they'll be like, oh, your hair is so pretty today. And I'm like, people don't tell me that. Or like, I don't want certain people to tell me that, but like my Black girls can tell me that. Or like when they want me to fix their ponytail, I'm like, yes, I will fix it. Like I had no one to fix my ponytail when I was in elementary school, nor did I ever even want anyone to touch my ponytail. So just like the littlest things mean so much. So, but yeah, having someone who's there for you is huge. And me not having that just makes me want to be that more.
Right. So, I mean, you kind of talked about it just there. What is it like interacting with adults, right? Like not only in the sense of in the educational space, right? Like talking to interacting with adults about the books that you're reading or yeah. the amazing work that you're doing, but also just generally like, you know, being so tied in and so like connected to students in the way that you are. Like, what is that mm-hmm. dynamic like with like, you know, other older people, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. A lot of people, I think, know like my love for it. And like when I started this project, I think a lot of people were like, oh, that just like makes sense. Like Sarah would do something like that. But I think it's interesting for me, the people who then were like, I'm inspired to do this. I'm like, yes, go do it. But like, I would say the majority of people who have gone after what I've done are like white. And it's kind of conflicting for me sometimes because I'm like, this is great. We need this. I'm so happy. But at the same time, and especially when I started out, I was like, this is my mission and this is my vision. And I want to be honored for that. Like, it is so easy for a white person to take your idea and then them be on NBC. Right. And I was like, I'm not going to watch someone else go on the Today Show before me. Like, I'm not going to let that happen because it's so easy for someone to just take something and keep going with it because they have the resources and they're white and like these big white towns will support them. And I know it's possible for them and it's not possible for me. So I struggle sometimes with all these, you know, incredible, there's so many Little Free Diverse blank, Little Free Diverse here, Little Free Diverse there. And like, it's important work. At the end of the day, I always remind myself it's more diverse books out there. It is more people educating themselves. But what will sometimes like sting me a little is like, why can't we have more Black and Brown people doing this? And why am I still feel like the only one in this position? Like I've connected with other like Black and Brown people who are doing this work, but it seems much smaller than the other people, the white folks who are doing it. And so that's hard for me, but I also just know we all want to do good work. And then in terms of my coworkers, it's predominantly a white school with white coworkers who I love, and they're great people. And I think that I've been able to tap into like them. And a lot of them have like libraries pretty stocked with diverse books. Like I would be like, oh, you already have this book. Like, oh, I need that book. I hadn't ever really walked into a classroom where I was like, we need to change the books here. But I think that now we're just having more meaningful conversations about why the books are there. Like, it's so easy to just buy a book because like, you're like, oh yeah, I have a brown kid. I should get that one because it has a brown boy on the cover. But like, why are we buying it? What is the story telling? Is it just talking about the fact that he's the only brown boy in class? Or is it talking about him being a superhero because we should have books about brown kids just being superheroes or Black girls being a tooth fairy? And like, what is the storytelling? And so I think it's opened up more conversations and just more understanding, but it's an interesting like world when like you are still, I am still pretty much always the minority in many situations. And then I'm like doing this big project about like diversity. And I'm like, I feel like sometimes I have this weird spotlight that I already had, but it's like amplified. And I'm like, what do I do with this? How do I feel like safe still? But I'm still navigating that. And I like to watch people learn and grow and educate themselves. And however we all get there is how we get there. But it's definitely an interesting journey to go on.
Yeah. That's real. And, you know, continuing this, you know, just with, you know, how you relate to other people, I wanted to bring up this page as like my favorite page in the book.
Right? Yes.
Like, yes. Particularly because, you know, like, look, like it's so clear, like each one of these is a beautiful Black woman who are older and yes. like mentoring Tallulah. And then you got yes. this guy over here who's like, all fairies matter, right? And he's like, curmudgeonly. And then Tallulah's like, nah, like maybe next time, Tom. But anyway, what this got me thinking about was, you know, the fact that Tallulah, when she faced a problem, you know, had a great board, you know, for the most part, right, of older mentors who could like really help her through the problem. And so I was curious, like, if you felt like there were people that you have in your own life who are kind of like your own board of advisors.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, I've now turned Little Free Diverse Libraries into Diverse Stories, which is becoming a nonprofit. We're like doing all the paperwork. It's a process. But on my board is one of my best friends, Ava. And so she is like, was actually one of the first Black girlfriends that I ever had. And I only met her like 4 years ago. And so like, she holds a really special place in my heart because I'm like, I can go out and be with someone who is Black and not be the only person now. And like, I really look to her in that way. And so when she like just was really excited about Diverse Stories and Little Free Diverse Libraries, I was like, I need you on my team because I need you, your finance skills. And I also need your Black beauty. And I also need you as someone who is like here to continue this. And so that was really important to me to have her there. And then someone who is not on my board as of right now, because it's just a board of three, but someone who has really been like a guiding light and like really thoughtful person throughout this whole thing is my assistant principal, Miss Parkinson. And she loves books. And I actually, she always has outside of her door, like what Miss Parkinson is reading. And I've always loved that because that is where the love for reading comes though. Then other kids see, oh, like she's reading this book. And like there, sometimes she reads young adult books that her middle schoolers could also read. Sometimes she's reading older books that teachers are like, oh, I should read that. But I've always loved that she does that because I'm like, this is where love for reading like continues on. But she has definitely helped me throughout this, has always encouraged me. She like will have her family like all and gather around the TV when like I had been on TV once, and like she'll buy any book that I pretty much post and is like, I'm getting it, I'm doing it, I'm reading it. And so she just is so there. But then she's also there with me at school when we have tough conversations about like other people who we work with and how we do feel like sometimes we, and she and I and a few others are like, you know, there's the small minority of the Black educators in the building. And so we have conversations that we connect back to Little Free Diverse Libraries and we connect back to the work that I'm doing, but we also connect to as two Black females working in predominantly white area. But she's just always one lifting me up and reminding me that I did this and I started this, and like looks at me, is like, no, you're famous and you can't lie. And I'm like, stop. And I'm like, I don't want to talk about this, but she's always lifting me up. And I don't always have people who are lifting me up in that way. And you know, Little Free Diverse Library started a year and a half ago almost. And, you know, it gets old to some people, but she has never made it feel like it's gotten old. And she has always made me feel like this is just the beginning. Like, let's keep reading and let's keep doing this. And so when my board expands, she will 1000% be on it because I need people who love to read and people who also love to lift others up. And that's exactly what she does. And I hope she listens to this podcast. I'll make her.
I was about to say, her.
She's incredible. She's incredible. And she used to be a teacher too. And now she's an assistant principal. So she just like understands, you know, the scope of education and what can be done and what's not being done and how to lift other Black and brown children up specifically. And more people should be like her.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, so like Jen and I also have the experience of like growing up in like primarily white, you know, schools and neighborhoods. I just wanted to ask what that journey has been like for you, you know, coming out of school and coming out of that, because it's a process. And I know there's a lot to unpack here. I don't know how fun, you know, it is a question, but I wanted to ask it.
It's a good question. My dad's standing here trying to do something with the Saran wrap while I'm recording a podcast. But he knows my struggle growing up in school. My dad was the one who like would do my hair every morning and get me ready and looking presentable as possible. It was hard growing up. Like I just was the only one until like middle school when in Boston, they have this thing called Metco where they like bring kids in from Boston. I don't know what it stands for, but they basically bring Black kids in from like Boston. And I'm like, this seems unfair that I haven't been with any Black kids until now. And you guys are just essentially like shipping them in on a bus to like make yourself feel better maybe and like give them a good education. But like at what cost? Because they also were just like so isolated, but like I didn't interact with them because they had their own system. They had their own, like they were all best friends. They came off the bus together. They went on the bus together. No one tried to like really integrate, you know, us with the Metco students, which is why they even have like the Metco students. I don't even know why that's a name for them. Like, I think it's ridiculous. But anyways, that was my first time being in school with like other kids that looked like me. And still then I didn't feel like connected and it was hard. And then I went to college and I still didn't. And it's funny because Ava, who's on my board, she also went to college with me and we knew of each other, but we went just kind of walked different paths. And so then when we became friends after college, I'm like, how did I go so long without this? How did I go so long? Because it feels so good now. And a lot of teachers always just, you know, were interested in the fact that I was Black. Like if I went to Uganda where my dad's from and came back with braids, they'd be like, oh my God, like, wow. And like, just like, so annoying. And like so many little things like that, that make you think like, how did I get through this? And I honestly don't know how much I did. And like a lot of it's hard. And sometimes I'm very insecure with myself and unsure of myself because of that. And because of growing up in a space that was like predominantly white. But then now working at the school I do, it reminds me of like why you need to see yourself in other people and why you need to have other people root for you. So it was not easy growing up. I had a great group of friends. They're all white, but like we were still friends from kindergarten until now. I'm seeing one of them later. And so it's special because we've had really important conversations. Like last summer, all the books would arrive. We would sit on my porch. We would unpack the books. We would talk about like, my friend Annalise would be like, I knew you were Black, but I didn't really think about it much. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think you did. And I think she was raised also really well to just be like, that's Sarah. And that's great. But like, there's some important conversations that I think could have been had, like things that weren't discussed that were just swept under the rug. And, you know, I've talked with a lot of my friends just about what it was like for them. And they're like, we didn't think much about it. And I can't blame them. But now it's like, that I think about these kids today. And it's like, we have to think about it and we have to talk about it. And we're doing everyone a disservice when we don't. Yeah.
Man. Yeah, no, I felt the same way with some of my friends, like close friends, sending me these long paragraph texts. And I'm like, wait a second, like, damn, like you never even thought about it. We never talked about it. And like, I'm like, wow, you know, it's just crazy how last summer, especially like we had to make up for lost time,
right.
in that sense. And yeah, like how are you all talking about race in like schools now, given everything that's happened? Like, cause I'm sure it's become more important and like just having that conversation with kids, I'm sure it looks much different. Or maybe not too. So I don't know.
I mean, I think that a lot of times the conversations happen after something's happened. Like when certain things happen, certain conversations are then had. But I don't know how long the conversations are continued. And this is not to anyone's fault. I think that teaching is like the hardest job. And I think that there are so many things teachers need and want to do in a day. And, you know, the fear of these kids not learning certain things and their students not getting to a certain level in reading are scary thoughts. But I also think that the world is scary and that we need to talk about this, the things that are happening and or just talk about our differences more. And I think a lot of teachers, at least in my school, work hard to do it, but I think that there's not enough time to give it the thoughtfulness I think it deserves, or they feel like there's not enough time. I think there is. It's just, what are we prioritizing as a school and beyond our school? It's like the Board of Education, right? And like, where do we put an emphasis on? And I think a lot of times, from what I see online, from what I see at my school, like people love to lean into like, we're all different. And like, everyone like shares what they're different, but then I'm like, we're not going into like then the histories and the cultures and the depth of our differences. We're just like, I have black hair. I have black skin. My mom goes to Dominican Republic in the summer. It's like, okay, why? Like, is it to get more finances? Is it to support people back home? Like, there's so much depth. And granted, I work with elementary students, so like, we can't necessarily go maybe that far, although I think we can challenge that more. But I think that there just needs to be more depth to these conversations. And I think that a lot of the times it starts with books. And I think books are a great way to, not to like always bring it back to books, but I think that books can teach so much, and they're a really, really great resource. And there's fun books, there's hard books, there's big books, and using those to guide conversations and to educate is so important. And so like sharing those books with families, sharing those books with others in your friend group are so important. But I don't know. I don't know what, I just think we need to be so literal about what, when we're teaching race, and we need to do it very early. And we need to have the conversations, and I think they can get bigger. And if you have tough conversations in kindergarten, by the time you're in eighth grade, you're like, oh yeah, we talk about tough shit. And like, that's what we do. And we talk about like why, like my mom works four jobs, and why like we're scared of healthcare workers or like the government, and like nervous about certain things, because yeah, that's what our reality is. But like, if we start young having tough conversations, as simple as, you know, skin color, and like really dive into it, then when you get older, it's not a scary thing. It's a normal thing. And you almost will probably crave it, and you'll want to have those conversations, and you'll want to indulge in deep conversations with people who look like you, who don't look like you, who are older than you. And I think we just need to be less scared and just do it.
Yeah, that's so real. I mean, I feel like people do honestly crave it now. But because school is usually very reactive to only like talking about it when there's panic, right. No one really knows how to have deep conversations. I think we're really craving to be able to like feel seen by other people, see other people for who they are. But a lot of that's lost. And, you know, obviously school's not fully to blame for that. You know, we can talk about like social media and just how the economy works, where you do have to be working several jobs, and you have this survival anxiety just about like supporting your basic needs. But you know, education again is such a inherently hopeful institution, because it is about like recognizing that, you know, we can do things differently and set a brighter course for, you know, future generations, just off of like being more intentional about it.
Agreed. Like, I think society as a whole has so much work to do. And like, for me, I see it as starting like a lot of these things starting in schools, but like, it's not just schools, it's offices, it's public places. It's so many places everywhere, which is why I like to put little free diverse libraries everywhere. One just opened up in like occupational physical therapy office. And I'm like, yeah, because we can have those books there. Why won't we? And like, I think there's so much work to be done everywhere. And so these conversations need to happen in a lot of spaces.
So let's say someone listening to our podcast is like, Sarah is so cool. I want a little free diverse library, like now to my house. Like, how would that process happen? Like, could I just like, give you all money, or like reach out to you all and say like, yo, give me books? I buy the books.
Yeah. So when I've partnered with schools, what I do is I buy a library from Little Free Library, which they range in price. I think they range from like $200 to $400. I also tell people, if you want to build one yourself, like do it. Just do it. I think it's probably not that hard. They have like blueprints and stuff, but for me, I'm not going to build one right now. But I buy them from Little Free Library. We get a plaque and like a charter sign. So that means it goes onto a world map on Little Free Library's website. I'm also not like affiliated with them anyway. I just, without Little Free Library, there would not be Little Free Diverse Libraries. So I use them still. Maybe one day I'll have my own map, but baby steps. But anyways, the charter sign, all my charter signs say amplifying and empowering diverse voices. And then, you know, you set it up where you see fit. It's hard to get them into public spaces. Like you have to go through parks and recreational things, but you know, you can put them pretty much anywhere that's your own. People put them in flower pots so that they're not stuck in the ground. But anyways, I would order you a library, send you the library, send you, I usually do like a starter pack of 20 books, probably 75% kids books, 25% adult books. And for me, I really do look into where the library is going. So if the library is going to Chicago, I like to put books in about redlining and like issues that have happened in Chicago regarding minority populations. If the book is going to California, a lot of times we'll put books that are also in Spanish because some of the areas are like highly populated with Hispanic speaking people. And so I just like, and one time I sent a library to this school that they have like a predominantly LGBTQ plus population of parents. And so I was like, we're going to send books that talk about this. And so I like to be intentional about the books I'm sending and where they're going. Although once a book goes in, you have no idea if it's ever coming back, which is fine by me always. But just to know like the area, the community, what you're working with, because that's where you're going to tap into more. And then more conversations can start from there. But anyways, I'd send you the library, send you the starter pack, and then you're off to the races with your library. But I think that everyone I know who started their own has seen so many people donate books, bring books back, share books. And I think you just really feel this different connection with the community. When I look at my library outside my house, the house that I've grown up in, and to see people stop and see people pull over the car or see kids on their way to school begging to get a book, I'm just like, little bits of change, little steps. And so it feels good. And I think it makes me feel connected even when I'm away. It makes me feel like I'm doing something for Black and Brown kids, the few that walk by or the few that travel here to this library. And I think, and I say this to the schools, when you put your library in the ground, it's like, this is like where we stand. This is how we feel. We believe that diverse books are important and they matter. And if you don't, and some people be like, well, what about all books? And I'm like, they're great. You can go to Barnes and Noble and they actually have them everywhere. But this library is going to be have Black and Brown books. So, because I never found them when I was little. So now I can, and someone else can too. So anyways, the library process is, I mean, it's a long process sometimes, but on my website, diversestories.org, I have like a guide to setting it up because you also want to make it like a celebration. Like you want to install it. And like I told my principal, cause we're installing it, our Little Free Diverse Library soon. I'm like, I'm going to have the New York Times here. Like we're making this big, but you want people to know about it. You wanted people to share about it. And so anyways, my guide on my website kind of walks through like the steps on installing and getting one and making it happen. But I would love to get you guys one and we can definitely try to make that happen.
Yeah, it's funny. Miles was like asking it as a hypothetical, but that was really like us being like, so we have a friend who's like trying to get it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, how are we going to do this?
Yeah, exactly. But no, like, you know, we like in our neighborhood in Dayton, we just moved from there, but there was, those were the first Little Free Libraries we'd ever seen. And
wow.
I'll never forget, like, I was so, like, hyped about even seeing one and being like, wait, for real? I can just, like, take some books and, like, right? And, you know, of course, a lot of the books were, like, I was like, what the hell? But I'll never forget, like, there was Brown Girl Dreaming, Jacqueline Woodson in one of them. And my, like, our sister, like, found the book and, like, loved it and, like, took it. And, you know, it really, like, registered with her, obviously. And that was, like, really special, right? And I think that this is what the beauty of what you're doing is, because it's distributing books, like, across the entire environment, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like you have your phone on you all the time, but when you have these little free diverse libraries on your way to school, like, then you're remembering about books because they're visible and tangible there as well, just like your phone might be, you know?
Right.
But of course, you know, when you're able to get that much more intimate with the book and share it with people and, like, feel really inspired by it, like, it always lasts longer than, like, you know, a single post that you might see. But yeah, I think that's the thing about, like, as great as libraries are, right? Like, you can't see any of the books from the outside, you know?
Right.
Like, and some do better about, like, having the windows and whatnot. But when you have like a little free diverse library where it's like, you can see the books right there, it just, like, piques your curiosity a little bit.
It does. It just gets you in, and it gets you questioning, and it gets you wanting to read more. And I just think that as it grows, people also, like, if I find if I go to a library and I'm like, okay, I can't take all seven, I'll take one. But then you're like at a bookstore and you're like, I did see that book in a little free diverse library, and, like, it does look really good. I'll now buy this from a bookstore. And so hopefully it's a Black owned bookstore, which I have a list of on my website, or an indie bookstore. But you're like, okay, now I, like, wheels turn. And so I think I'm just wheels turn, get the wheels turning and the pages turning. Yeah, that's it.
Exactly. And so I'm sure you're wondering now, like, oh man, like, this is the best podcast ever. Like, how could it possibly be more fun? Well, here it is. So Tooth Fairy CEO.
Yes.
That's a boss three word title. What is the boss three word title that encompasses all of your various jobs and roles and just being the great person that you are? What is the three word title?
I would say confident Black queen.
Wow. You like Sarah, the confident Black queen.
Yes.
Like, right here with the fire ass outfit.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Wow. I was thinking it was going to be, you know, Easter Bunny, you know, boss, but I was, that's much better.
Thank you guys. Thank you. What's yours?
Oh, Miles Clay Menifee. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, that's, I love that.
Nah,
what? You can't just use your name, bro. Like, you're like, oh yeah, Daniels Menifee. Actually, yeah.
I don't even know. Well, thank you so much though, Sarah, for coming on our show. And
oh my God. Thank you guys. This was
your whole story.
Yeah, it was so fun. It's always, there's my dad. It's always so good to talk with you all and talk with anyone about this and just, like, feel once again inspired and, like, get back out and keep doing the work and doesn't stop. But it feels good when, you know, you can talk about it with other people and maybe get other people libraries and get other people just as excited as I am. And I think what you two are doing is also incredible, like, shining a light on all these different books and just being these, like, two Black men who, like, just stand by books is just always so cool too. And so hopefully we can just all get people reading and inspired and doing the good work that you both are doing.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Book That Blank podcast. Be sure to check out Sarah's Instagram at Little Free Diverse Libraries, and to donate money or books, check out her website, diversestories.org. Thank you again, and we'll catch you next time.